Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
You know, we closed the border first last November 23rd, right before Thanksgiving. And that was done when the screwworm was only detected in the very southernmost part of Mexico. But to get new protocols in place, some additional inspection procedures, quarantine facilities, and so on. And once those were in place, those facilities were ready to go, we reopened the border in early February and had been bringing some cattle back in for the last, since February until May 11th.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel.
We had brought in about 200,000 head thus far this year. And then with the detection of New World screwworm farther north in Mexico, at a point now where it's much more concerning to the U.S., so the border is now closed again.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I do want to say something because I get a lot of credit for steering this administration toward the MAHA movement. But I joined the campaign in August. I joined President Trump in August and became, you know, went from independent to his campaign.
At a White House event last week, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
But it was in June that he made a speech specifically on this issue. It was a MAHA speech before MAHA existed. And that I took note of that speech at the time and thought there's a potential here for a common ground. I want to thank you for your vision, for your courage, for standing up. You know, President Trump is a populist president. He's a president he's blamed for giving money to billionaires and all this stuff. We hear about that all the time. But he is on the side of the middle class, the working class, the poor in this country, people. And I've been following, I've met every president since my uncle was president, and I've never seen a president, Democrat or Republican, that is willing to stand up to industry when it's the right thing to do, and the willing to talk about really difficult issues and to hold his stand on those issues. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm very, very grateful to you. I've sat with industry again and again in a room with him and heard him say, we can't do that. We're going to do something different, deliver news that they didn't want to hear. So I'm grateful to this. This is a milestone. There's never in American history has the federal government taken a position on public health like this. And because of President Trump's leadership, it's not just one cabinet secretary, it's the entire government that is behind this report. And I can say again, I talked a little bit about when I met Rachel Carson as a boy. My uncle tried to do this, but he was killed and it never got done. And ever since then, we've been waiting for a president who would stand up and speak on behalf of the health of the American people and say, there is no difference between good economic policy, good environmental policy, and good public health policy, and good industrial policy. We can have all of them, but we need a united cabinet, and we need to go forward as a single people. I want to thank you for that, President Trump.
The Administrator for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Dr. Oz.
I think it's a moral failing if we don't address this, but it's definitely a financial failing as well. 50% of children are on Medicaid or on the CHIP program. It is an obligation we all have to address this reality. As you know, the cost of Medicaid has gone up 50% in 5 years.
Right.
I thank you very much for having the bravery to commission this report, and Secretary Kennedy, Secretary Rollins, Lee Zeldin, and everybody else on this panel for being able to effect what has not been done since this law for Medicare and Medicaid was written in 1965.
Dr. Marty McCary is commissioner for the FDA.
The United States is the best in the world when it comes to proton beam therapy, CAR T, sophisticated operations. But when it comes to the health of the population, it's been a 50-year failure. And we have got to change course. And it's not until you have had the courage to let us take on these giant issues, as Vince Haley said, without any sacred cows, that we've been able to change. And I think this will transform our healthcare system from a reactionary system where doctors are playing whack-a-mole to a proactive system.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I've congratulated you yet, Mr. Secretary, so belated congratulations. Be careful what you ask for, right?
I don't think I asked for this, but but I did say yes. So
okay, fair enough.
Little did you know.
Nevada Republican Representative Mark Amadei with the Secretary of Interior, Doug Burgum, last week at a House Appropriations Subcommittee on the Interior 2026 budget.
Can you tell me where you're at in terms of, I'm intrigued by the idea of consolidating federal wildland fire responsibilities. Can you tell me, will Boise still be kind of the operational center of firefighting under this? And briefly, just where we at on that consolidation. I think I got the impression your consolidation is going to be ready to go this fire season, which is, I don't know, depending on where you are, might be here already, but here shortly.
No, the fire season's here already, and I've been working closely with specifically with Brooke Rollins and USDA on this plan, and I think that the key here is building off the successes we have. You know, the Idaho, the joint operation right now is the closest thing we have to coordination, but we still end up in situations that are where resource allocation is affecting our ability to fight fires. I had personal experience of this last October. We had a wildland fire in North Dakota. It was happening not completely overlap, but not long after the L.A. fires at 124,000 acres. That's bigger than all the L.A. fires. No one ever heard about it. We lost two lives. We had a couple of ranchers trying to protect livestock that got caught in the raging speed of a overland prairie wildfire. Very tragic. We knew that it was a high fire risk season. We had our state resources, including our National Guard, on call, in position, ready to go. Black Hawk helicopters with the ability to do drop buckets out trying to protect folks. This started on middle of the night on a Friday night, and Saturday morning at 6 a.m., myself and the state of North Dakota was calling for federal air support, and they arrived on Tuesday. We'd been called on Saturday, called on Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, Monday afternoon, Tuesday. That entire time, I'm fully understand, because now Senator Tim Sheehy, who is running a contract business, flying aircraft, had aircraft sitting on the ground in Montana, a short distance away, and there was never a decision made to distribute aircraft for this thing. And where it was, the adjacency of the fire to Lake Sakakawea, the fact that it was in these tough Badlands canyons that you couldn't get out with fire crews, they came in with their scoopers, they're loading up a plane in 11 seconds, skimming along the surface, 6 tons of water, and they had this fire out in 4 hours. And so it was a dramatic, dramatic example of how a little better coordination of releasing resources and making decisions could get us there. And I think that so we're moving ahead with that, and I would expect that you'll hear from ahead of any legislation, you'll hear a joint announcement from Brooke Rollins and myself soon about how we're trying to implement greater coordination in this fire season.
Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. You're listening to a comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's pretty tough right now in the ag equipment market, whether that's selling of new equipment or used equipment. It's a tough market.
Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, AEM.
For the month of April in 25, we're down for combines. We're down 48% for the year versus this time last year. Granted, we sold a lot of combines last year, so we're coming off of some high numbers. But then across the board, tractor sales are down just about 13% across the board in all classes. We had some real nice bumps during the pandemic for those small tractors, where folks were investing in their acreage and buying some tractors. That need's kind of been satisfied. For the last 3 years, we've been seeing a very nice bump in the higher horsepower tractors, whether that's articulated four-wheel drives or row crop tractors. That market had been pretty solid for the last few years. Right now, we're just kind of seeing softness across the board, and there are a number of things that could lead into that. It's a little bit about just the overall ag economy, which could be better. It certainly has a lot to do with the uncertainty related to geopolitical issues or trade or biofuels or go through the list, weather. It could be interest rates. All of these things kind of come into play right now, where just the tractor market's a little bit soft.
Many within the ag industry already know the story, but Blade says they try to take the message outside of ag.
Just this past week, we were in Washington, D.C. with 81 pieces of construction equipment, and talking with regulators and policymakers. And we had over 100 tours of elected officials, staffs, regulators, really showing the latest and greatest technology, specifically on the construction side. Although we did have a lot of interest, from those that they crossed into other sectors, including, EPA and even some folks from USDA and even OSHA that have interest in the farm community. But it's fun showcasing to those people that maybe have never seen a tractor, excavator, bulldozer, ever, or certainly haven't seen a modern one. And, you know, the example I love to give is that folks assume that a bulldozer or a tractor emits black smoke. But you and I know that, and your listeners know that, any tractor that has been produced in the last 20 years does not produce black smoke. So having those conversations with folks from EPA that see our industry, see heavy equipment oftentimes as being dirty and polluting, it's really fun to show them the latest and greatest technology of how we've done, you know, great work on the industry to deliver products that are more efficient, that are more environmentally sustainable, and deliver better use for the end user, better safety for the end user.
AEM is a major part of Commodity Classic.
We're doing the early planning this year for Commodity Classic. Is going to be in San Antonio, I believe, kind of in your backyard, Tony. So we will be in San Antonio in late February. Now's the time to begin to put your calendar in place and plan to attend. If you've never attended Commodity Classic as a grower or as a stakeholder in the ag industry, it is a must-attend event. You'll find the latest and greatest technology as well as some pretty phenomenal educational events. So make plans to go this year and say hi to me. It's on my birthday, so come by and say hi.
Where can you learn more?
The best place to learn about us is at AEM.org, or you can find us on all of the appropriate social media. You'll see a ton of things that we're doing for the benefit of the industry and for the benefits of farmers. So it's a privilege to serve the industry in the way that we get to do so. Thank you.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Three things. First, on behalf of an extremely grateful nation and on behalf of a lot of extremely grateful Maha moms who are out there, Secretary Kennedy and Mr. President, thank you.
At a White House event last week on Making America Healthy Again, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
I see a Maha mom and grandma and our amazing chief of staff right there, Susie Wiles. I see a Maha mom and Caroline Levitt all across our cabinet. Sir, my oldest son, Luke, is here. Stand up, Luke. I am a Maha mom of four. And this hits particularly close to home for every single one of us in this room. That's the first thing. The second thing is that you mentioned, sir, in your remarks that we are on track to sign multiples of SNAP waivers to get junk food and sugary drinks out of our food stamp system. And I am so proud. I am so proud to announce that on Monday, I was in Nebraska with Governor Pillen, where we signed the first one. An hour ago, I signed the second one for Governor Braun in Indiana. He may not even know that. I've got it right here, sir. I also signed the third one, Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa, about an hour ago. with a half a dozen more coming down the line. And, sir, that has never happened before. Under Republican or Democrat administrations, we have never made that happen before. So I am so proud and so grateful for your leadership.
We have Governor Morrissey here, who is the first one to apply from West Virginia.
Oh, Governor Morrissey. We will make sure you're at the top of the pile, sir. I apologize. Governor Sanders has been a leader. Governor Polis from Colorado. It has been remarkable how these governors have stood up. That's the second thing. The third and final thing, sir, is we all know that at the center of making America healthy again is making American agriculture great again. Without American agriculture... Without American agriculture at the center of this discussion, we have the most robust, the safest, the best agriculture system in the world. And in partnership with the amazing Secretary Kennedy and all of these incredible patriots sitting around this table, under the leadership of the extraordinary President Donald J. Trump, we will make America healthy again. And what an honor it is to be a part of that.
Dr. Roger Marshall is a senator from Kansas and a member of the Senate Ag Committee.
Mr. President, as you know, I spent 25 years delivering babies most every day. We saw a huge epidemic of diabetes, of pregnancy, and this has exploded in so many different directions now. We have an epidemic of in mental health, in our youth, obesity rates 20-30%, 20% of our children on a prescription drug, 60-70% of adults on a prescription drug. We can do better than this. And it does start with the farmer. It starts with soil health. And I just want you to know that our farmers are so committed to this as well. And so many of them are already doing great things. They're making the soil healthier. They're using less pesticides. They're doing all the right things. It's going to take a little bit more effort and time to get everybody with those practices. But the American farmer and rancher were the original environmentalists, the original conservationists, and they'll be right here working beside us. And we appreciate your support of them as well.
Thank you, Rick.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I do want to thank you for bringing your many skills as a former governor and a businessman to this very important position.
Speaking to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, Representative Shelley Pingree from Massachusetts during a House Appropriations Subcommittee on the Department of Interior's 2026 budget.
The Department of Interior is tasked with protecting and managing our natural resources and cultural heritage, to providing scientific information about those resources and honoring our trust and treaty responsibility. But I will warn you, I am very concerned about the state of the Department of Interior. From my view, in just 4 months, the department has been destabilized, and there's been a stunning decline in its ability to meet its mission. Given your extensive executive experience, I am disappointed that you would allow this to happen. In partnership with Elon Musk's what I consider a rogue agency, the DOGE, you have illegally canceled grants for conservation, for ecosystem restoration, and other important work. Over 1,700 probationary employees have been recklessly fired, and 7,600 people, or 11% of the interior workforce, have been pushed to resign. These are not just numbers. These people are experts and dedicated public servants with decades of programmatic and institutional knowledge that is critically needed to ensure the department fulfills its mission and is a guardian of our public lands. To make matters worse, the agency has a hiring freeze, and you are considering even further reductions in force. I don't see this ending well for this precious agency that this committee is dedicated to oversee. And this committee has devoted hundreds of hours to nurturing this agency. I'm very proud to serve on a committee that generally works in a bipartisan way to make sure that the Department of Interior stays strong. Further, due to the policies you have instituted, employees are hamstrung from accomplishing everyday tasks by absurdly limiting credit card expenditures to $1. This is no way to efficiently run an organization. In fact, these actions seem to be designed to obstruct employees from doing their job. Even the National Park Service feels that it's been under attack. Ahead of peak season, you've gutted staff. So my national park, like Acadia in my home state of Maine, is understaffed and without the resources needed to keep summer visitors safe. Our parks are pristine and need to be protected. Fiscal year 2026 is equally devastating, with a proposed cut to the department of 30%. The That budget eviscerates the U.S. Geological Survey with a proposed $564 million cut, targeting scientific research on natural hazards, ecosystems, water, and earth mapping. These programs help us monitor and provide real-time earthquake and hazard information. They strengthen our assessment of groundwater and surface water systems, and they help ensure our national security by informing the management of our mineral and energy resources. Without these programs at USGS, our communities will be left vulnerable to natural disasters and deprived of the scientific data that guides responsible land management. This budget, with a 30% cut, shamefully abandons our trust and treaty obligations to Native Americans, slashing the Bureau of Indian Affairs Public Safety and Justice programs by 19% when we are already only meeting a fraction of the need. The budget also chooses to eliminate funding for a desperately needed school construction, leaving a $1 billion repair backlog untouched. So, Secretary Burgum, the document we're here to discuss today is more than just a budget. It's a blueprint for dismantling the very mission of the Department of Interior, making it impossible to protect our natural resources and iconic national parks or uphold our commitments to tribal communities now and for future generations. As the ranking member on this committee, I wholeheartedly oppose these cuts. I cannot stand by and watch this agency be hollowed out.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As most of you probably know, CCI is the export promotion arm of the National Cotton Council.
Dr. Gary Adams is CEO of the National Cotton Council.
It's their mission to promote U.S. cotton and U.S. cotton manufactured products around the globe. And that's a critically important job, given that we have about 85% of our U.S. cotton production that's exported as raw fiber. And much of the remaining 15% that's used by our textile industry is exported in yarns and fabrics. In today's competitive global environment, the work of CCI is very important.
Liz Hirschfeld is the new executive director for Cotton Council International.
Early in my college days, I worked at a restaurant and I worked for the Gap in the stores, right? And I loved fashion and I thought like, oh, I'm going to go be a buyer at the Gap. I grew up in California and I didn't know what that meant, right? And my dad actually encouraged me to go do something else and not try to work my way up the stores. And he was in the industry unexpectedly. He was the president of FIT, but not because he was in the fashion industry. At any rate, his encouragement was right. I ended up actually taking one of my first roles at JCPenney and learning kind of merchandising and all that, and ended up moving to a small company in San Francisco called Buyer of California. And that's when I really started to understand what I loved about the industry. And it really was this idea. I love the product. I love the creativity and the innovation. But I also loved the business side of it and being able to like architect a product and get it to a price and the quality. And then eventually ended up at Gap, which was kind of my dream. And I, you know, was an amazing opportunity for me. And that's where my eyes were really open to the international business side of things. And so really being able to take like the idea of being able to be creative and innovative, but also managing a business and all the complexities that come with international trade was something that I really loved. And I have a very operational mind. So I always want to look at things and see like, how can they be done in a more efficient way? And it just fit everything that I loved, right? And as I, you know, the sustainability piece of it, you know, as I got more involved in that aspect, I just became really passionate about it, particularly, and not on purpose, but ultimately very interesting. All the brands I worked for were very cotton rich brands, right? Gap Inc., Old Navy, Bonobos, we were very natural fiber focused, very cotton, and then also J. Crew Group as well. And so thinking about soil health and learning about that got me really passionate about like we can make small changes and we can impact in such a huge way. And when you think about the fact that we've repaired the ozone layer, when, you know, I was a kid, it was like, don't go outside, like you're going to get, you know, it's there's a hole in the ozone layer. We can kind of do anything. And I think that that's really exciting. And the innovation and the collaborative aspect of that part of the industry to me is really exciting.
But what does she specifically bring to the equation?
Well, I think that having the brand side experience is really important because I can definitely give that perspective of, hey, if I was in a brand, this is what I would want, right? And I think that's important. Having that, it's like almost like the last like missing link of this amazing program. So how do we come bring it like full circle? So we offer all of these things. How do we get the brands engaged? How do we grow the positive perception of U.S. cotton with those brands? So that they want to support it in the way that we need them to. And they want to say, like, hey, we want to nominate U.S. Cotton. So I think having that experience is really going to be helpful. And then, of course, like, I really understand the supply chain and the whole, you know, from cotton and the farm all the way to the manufacturer and the final product. And so I think that that's helpful. And as we think about different ways to approach some of our programs and offerings.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
More tightening of cattle and beef supplies per USDA's latest cattle on feed report. Livestock analyst Michael McConnell says for the period ending May 1st,
we have relatively smaller inventories in feedlots relative to a year ago with fewer placements and fewer marketings. That's reflective of the overall tighter cattle situation than what we've seen the past couple of years.
The 11.4 million head of fed cattle and calves placed in feedlots on the 1st of May reflects a 2% year-over-year decrease.
Lower placements reflective of relatively limited supplies of cattle outside feedlots available to come in as feeder cattle, which is also reflecting relatively high prices that we're seeing for feeder cattle as well.
Also directly impacted by less placements, marketings of fed cattle, down from the previous year due to tighter supplies, yet also strong demand, indicated in higher beef steer and wholesale beef prices. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.